of home were burning brightly when I left so long ago.
You're listening to Can't Do Nothing With Love, an award-winning short story collection written and read by Ellen Morris Pruitt. Today's episode features Just Now. 1 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and I'm sitting in the Elks Lodge outside Hernando, because where else in north of Mississippi do you go to sit Zen? We've taken the tour. Through the meeting room comes Zendo with its two dispirited flags. Down the long hallway featuring a framed Jesus hanging crooked. Into the female sleeping quarters paneled in pine, where we turned, mice in a maze, and retraced our steps through the echoing hallway. Repassing Jesus. What was a picture of Jesus doing in the Elks Lodge? Probably the same thing as the NASCAR flag. Someone just wanted it there. Our tour guide was an Elks man, sans fez or whatever it is they wear. He gave us the blowing the fuse speech, plug your hairdryer into the outlet below the air conditioner, or all hell will break loose. Then he sat us down in the meeting hall, handing us over to the teacher, getting rid of us fast as he could. The teacher stands at the foot of the wooden stage and introduces himself. He's wearing a black robe over black pants and a black shirt. He tells us, among other things, that he owns a pet Shih Tzu and he's a Catholic priest. He's also a famous Zen master, totally into Buddhist teachings. My friend Buddy got him here from South Louisiana by organizing a petition drive on yellow legal paper, which he folded and stuffed into an envelope and mailed to a small Louisiana town as evidence of our enthusiasm. The Elks charged us $50 each to attend, for which we received dinner, overnight stay in bunk beds, breakfast, and all the sitting you can stand. Oh, and BYOC, bring your own cushion. After all his work, Buddy didn't show because he caught the flu. No one else from class came either. I knew Buddy from my time at North Mississippi Community College when I took Zen 101 as my gym class, Zen Gym 101. We were pretty good. One time the police tromped into the Zendo with their shoes on and hauled away a guy who it turned out had been writing threatening letters to the teacher. Come with us, the big cop directed, hefting the boy by the arm, and none of the rest of us budged from our cushions. But then someone told the State Board of Education it was heresy to teach Zen, so that was the end of Zen Gym 101. It was bad timing for me. I could have used the group sitting, but the State Board didn't know that. The teacher gives us a few pointers, a very few, while gently smoothing the front of his robe. Empty your mind of thought. Be aware. Sit as still as Mount something. The overhead light catches the lens of his wire-rimmed glasses, blanking his eyes. I have placed my faith and my precious $50 in this man who, you can tell, is a crazy monk kept sane by Zen. Without the practice, he'd probably be flapping his robe and squawking like a chicken. He keeps instructing us to be where you are. Pay attention to form, he says, and notice the way you enter and exit the Zendo. What I'm noticing is the hairy buffalo head nailed to the wall. The buffalo is wearing a red plastic cowboy hat, much too small for him. The hat has a drawstring with a little white knob on the end to adjust the strap, but the hat is never going to fit that big old head. There is no coming or going, the teacher intones. No life or death, he chants, and I wonder what the buffalo would have to say about that. We're seated on the floor in the middle of the room, gracing our teacher with the rapt attention of little children during story time. An elderly man wearing a Coleman Lantern t-shirt blinks his eyes, as if fighting back tears. I focus on the chairs shoved against the wall and stacked one on top of another, in a chairs having sex kind of way. Here, honey, you face that direction. I'll face this one. As soon as we vacate the premises, the Elks and their fezzes will emerge from their hiding places and unstack the naughty chairs, arranging them into proper rows again, eager to erase any evidence of our having been there, in their Elks Lodge, sitting Zen. The teacher lights a candle. He places the candle on the edge of the stage. He bows to the candle. The dude in front of me keeps rearranging his butt on a low wooden stool that reminds me of a game my older sister loved when we were kids, the one with the pegs and hammer. The wooden stool is two sizes too small for the man's butt, I understand. My Sishin retreat will be of no help if I focus on the man's oversized butt, lapping the edges of the stool. So I lift my gaze, only to discover the man has a mole behind his ear. I hate the sneaky mole hiding behind his ear like that. Sliding my cushion sideways, I line up with the stage. The stage is lovely, with blonde wood, nicked and scarred, but holding its own. The lit candle burns bright, casting shadows across the wood. The teacher dings the bell. We assume the position. Legs crossed, hands on the knees, elbows cocked, ready to set sail. We are. Mr. Mole behind the ear. Skinny Granny Zoroastrian. Red-headed Janie. Dude who sniffles too much. Big-breasted Bertha. Coleman Lantern T-shirt guy. Me. The retreat is silent. Who knows who these people are or what has brought them to Sishin? No coming, no going, just now. An ungraspable now. Now, 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 now. Except if you get off rhythm, it could be on, on, on. Or winnow, winnow, winnow. Which seems to express the ungraspable nature of now, so I use it. Winnow, winnow, winnow. Winnow, winnow, winnow. Someone farted. Winnow, 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 winnow. The bell dings. Time is up, and I never got past the winnow. Before each sitting, we receive Taisho from the teacher. During this time of group instruction, the teacher talks with a forced hesitancy. He'll get going and suddenly stop himself. You can almost hear his brain shouting, "You're lecturing! Slow down! Be Zen!" Sometimes he stops mid-sentence. I'm waiting for a stop mid-word, mid-opportune word, like, "Sit as still as my pet shits." Quit it, my brain scolds my mind. It's not funny, reducing people to easily handled single dimensions. As if he's reading my thoughts, the teacher begins to talk about Zen and Christianity. But when he says Christianity, he seems to mean Catholicism, using phrases like Holy Eucharist and the living waters of baptism, which show he doesn't know he's landed in the middle of the Southern Baptist country. Catholicism might be a bigger obstacle to sitting Zen in North Mississippi than Buddhism. Folks have heard enough about Catholicism to know they're supposed to be worried. Buddhism, for most of us, is a cloudless sky. We sit Zazen for another 25 minutes, while my thoughts leap from dry deserts to broken cemetery angels, to our childhood dinner table where my older sister lectured us on good manners. Wipe your mouth with the tip of your napkin like this. When you're finished, fold your hands in your lap like this. Always ask, "May I be excused, please?" "Kanhin, outside," the teacher yelps, and we gather in a clump while he throws open the door. A fresh breeze trips through the hallway, ruffling the blousy legs of the teacher's pants. Framed in the door, robes floating around him, the teacher transcends. My thoughts wander, gazing at the fluttering bulk of him. "To be able to hold two things in the mind is one," he said, and I see both the solid and the wafting of his body. He clears his throat and reminds us that walking Kinhin is an extension of our Zen practice. Do the same respect and lack of thought, or something like that. Lined up, hands clasped against the chest, deliberately processing, we move forward. Dude who sniffles too much slaps his feet on the parking lot asphalt, splay-footed, heavy on the downstroke. He's the type of man who surrounds himself with cushions, one for his back, two for his knees, barricading himself in, protecting his space against the intruding world, warding off the unexpected slices of fate. I try to corral my uncorralable thoughts. I came here for a reason. Will you let it in? We march past the archery range. Someone has left a loopy arrow in the target, not even in the bullseye. Who knew we had an archery range in Hernando? "What is this we, Kimasabi?" my brain asks my mind, which resides with my body, not in Hernando, but 30 miles away in the mobile home I bought when I had to be near my parents' one-story ranch. Returning next to, but not inside, my childhood home, in the rural fields outside the little town of Coldwater, dragging my sorrow and my trailer behind me like a woebegone hobo. No place to call my own, drifting without any moorings, believing I could tether to the brick ranch and Bob. 2-bedroom, 1-bath, carpeted bonus room. The house where my sister grew up more quickly than I did, hogging the bathroom, yelling at me for using her hairbrush, but teaching me to paint my fingernails bright pink so my hands flashed like hers. D-attach. D-attach. D-eth. Death. Uh-oh. Because there are so few of us, we each get desan with the teacher after every walking kinhan. One by one, we leave the zendo, conduct our face-to-face spiritual interview with the teacher, return to our sitting. I am last in line. After a time, Mr. Mole behind the ear returns and retakes his stool, which is my cue. I stand and exit. No one says a word. The teacher and I sit in a cubbyhole of a room, him behind a metal desk, me on a folding chair. While we're in the room, the silence rule for the session is lifted. "What has brought you to session?" the teacher asks. "Attachment," I say. He offers, like a psychiatrist who lets you talk about whatever you want, getting your own little self in trouble. My mind casts around and lands on his story about his pet Shih Tzu. "My dog. I'm attached to my dog. I want her with me all the time, go where I go. That Ruth, I will follow kind of thing, which they always read at weddings, even though it's a woman talking to her mother-in-law. Anyway, I'm overly attached to my dog. Her name is Sheila." The teacher folds his palms so the tips of his index finger touch his chin. "I expect wisdom on the order of an Aesop fable about filling your home with goats and chickens, so when they're gone, the house seems so big. That is, fill your life with people you love and who love you, and you won't be so attached to your dog. I get so caught up in solving my own plight, I forget. I have no dog." The teacher, in his infinite wisdom, seems to know this. "I've been having trouble," I offer. "Troubled waters can overwhelm," he says, a statement that seems to emerge more from his priestly side than from his Zen understanding. He waits, tapping his chin. I don't know if it's a Christian pose or a Buddhist pose. "Buddhists don't believe in God," I say. "Because I learned this much in Zen Gym 101, the state board wasn't far off in its fear of heresy. Zen is open to anyone." The teacher slowly opens his palms. The timer on his desk dings. Our 3 minutes are up. I leave. All things are interdependent and nothing causes anything. The empty sky does not hinder the white clouds from flying. The dragon only sings in the dead tree. I have no idea what this horse hooey means. We didn't get this stuff in Zen Gym 101 because we were cut short and never completed the class. That left me on my own trying to figure things out, and I hadn't done such a good job. I can't get a grasp of why things had to happen like they did. I need assistance, but I must wait for my desan with the teacher. My knee hurts. I rub gently and my finger skims across the bones that make our legs bend, the skeleton we carry with us throughout our lives. I retreat to my original posture, back of the hand propped atop the aching knee. I should go back to school and get my degree. I need to sit. I need to be less sarcastic. I need a lot of things. Sniffles, snuffles. Granny Zoroastrian clears her throat. If Mr. Coleman Lantern T-shirt coughs, we've got a symphony going. I strive to erase everything in my mind, giving traction to my thoughts so they don't tumble and slide into the ravine. But the water rushes fast, and before I know it, I'm headed over the cliff. Video images of my sister at summer camp, waving at the camera, making goofy faces in her little minnow swimsuit, vamping in her prom dress while Jimmy Granger beams, serious as she sits in her tall, white-painted lifeguard chair, always her lovely, lush hair flowing, head thrown back as she tosses her graduation cap in the air where it falls, falls. The bell dings and we are on our feet again, heading out the door. The teacher sits in front of the stage and I lecture myself, concentrate on your breath, count to 20 as you exhale, pray you don't pass out, let the life force flow through you unimpeded, and do not ask questions to which there are no answers. My eyes pop open. The buffalo stares at me, impassive. Why? I ask his marble, all-seeing eyes. Couldn't she have lived until her hair turned gray and her fingernails grew gnarled, and her beautiful face sagged with heavy wrinkles. Why did she leave me with these intolerable images of happiness and life? Mr. Mole behind the ear taps me on the shoulder and I flinch. He motions to the Zendo door. The candle flame flickers as I pass. What brings you to the session? The teacher asks, as if there really is no past and each moment is starting over. My sister died, I begin, but under his level gaze, my courage wilts. My sister stepped on a nail, her blood turned septic, and all of her systems failed in a rushing, cascading flutter of death. The teacher's eyes don't waver. She was stung by a bee. She's allergic to bee venom, and while everyone watched, she grew blue, and her lips puffed up, and then she was dead. At his stare, I swerve again. I was driving drunk and ran off the road, pelting her into a sycamore tree, breaking her neck. The bell dings. I rise. He sits. How do we eat Zen? The teacher instructs before we leave for supper. Then he answers his own question. We sit up straight. No elbows on the table. We eat quietly. Together we chant our meal gatha and proceed into the dining hall where they serve us bologna sandwiches with ruffled potato chips. Chomp, chomp, smack, smack. Quiet as a chipmunk cracking nuts between her teeth. Plus, I keep jerking my elbows off the table with an oh crap, which violates both the stated rule of silence and the unstated rule of no cursing out loud. We get a 20-minute tea break, Lipton and styrofoam cups, to allow our food to digest, then back to the Zendo for a final 25 minutes of Zazen, and we are dismissed for the night. I have no more opportunity to talk to the teacher, or anyone else for that matter, until the morning. Without the stricture of Zazen, my thoughts are free to fly where they may, like a bird firing into the sky, then veering suddenly off course and diving nose first into the grassy fields. As I round the corner to the hallway leading to the sleeping room, I pass the framed Jesus. I straighten his crooked frame and notice his raised hand. He's waving at me. I wave back. Then I see the nail hole in his hand. So maybe he wasn't waving. Too late. A wave released is a wave gone. Female sleeping quarters is a room with four bunk beds, hard against the pine paneling. A small sink is stuck into the corner for face washing. We take turns using the john. Red-headed Janie brushes her hair like someone out of a novel. Big-breasted Bertha squirms into her nightgown. Granny Zoroastrian removes her false teeth, plops them into a drinking glass she swiped from the dining hall. The pink gums sink against the glass, waft gently through the water like pale sea creatures, searching for the land of their birth. I fall asleep to the teacher's words. No coming, no going, nothing causes anything. Who will judge you? 5:45 in the morning, I'm back in the Zendo, courtesy of a bell gonging down the hallway at 5:30. The group performs greeting the teacher, where the teacher snakes around our cushions and passes us one by one, at which point we are to bow. When he passes me, I am afraid to make eye contact. Everyone except the teacher looks disheveled, ruffled. Our cushions have become our nests. We twitter and flit like mama birds settling in. It doesn't help when the teacher yelps, "Cushions!" and we all go to straightening big time. Wadded Kleenex and folded ponchos and sheets of paper fly around. The teacher rings the bell. 3 times. Why 3 times? Will he ring it again? Everyone who has ever been with us is still with us, the teacher's voice reminds the group. Something inside of me relaxes and my face falls slack and my hips displace, and I can hear a bird outside of the Zendo chirp, chirp, chirp. The mountain knows the stillness of a mountain. The breath in my lung expands with the ease of a flower unfolding. I exhale. The bird chirps. Will she chirp again? Breakfast is quiet oatmeal. I keep my elbows off the table. I do not curse. We settle into our cushions. We are in life. Life is in us. The bird chirps. When we walk Kinhin past the archery range, the arrow is gone. The rising sun streaks the morning sky. The air smells like new beginnings. Spring flowers, maybe, are like Winnow, where the end tails around and loops into the beginning again. Life, death, life, and death again. My sister was so full of life, I say, to forestall the inevitable question. Everyone wanted to be around her just because she radiated something. She loved little children. She was patient as hell with them. She'd finally found a boy who was worth her love, Nick Jameson. She and Nick were planning on getting married. She wanted so many kids, and Nick said, "Okay, if they all look like you." "Why are you?" She saved a boy from drowning when she was only 16 years old. They wrote her up in the newspaper as a hometown hero. The little boy said, "She gave my life back to me." "What brought you to?" "She died," I say, "at age 26. "She lived at age 26. "She is gone. She will always be with you. "She is dead. "Her spirit is alive. "She is dead." Like bickering children, we arrive at an impasse, so I bring in a new authority. "The buffalo says she's dead." He shrugs. What does that buffalo know? He can't even find a hat that fits. I smile. He smiles. The bell dings. The teacher asks big-breasted Bertha to perform a bell solo. She sits ramrod on her cushion and strikes the copper bells one by one. With each strike, a clear solo note rings out. When she finishes, she bows to the teacher. The teacher bows to her. He turns to us and lifts his palms. We all stand and bow to Bertha. Bertha keeps a straight face. Then we sit. "You have sat Zazen before," the teacher says, more a statement than a question. I nod. 59 days. Then I came here. 2 more days. That makes 61 days. Almost. "Why have you been sitting Zazen?" I stare at him. Will we ever get past this? "The first day, you found your cushion and you sat. But the second day, you came back and sat again." "Why?" he prompts. I feel the bell about to ring and rush out with it. She was my sister. She had a mole on her back, hidden below her left shoulder blade. It turned cancerous. They took off the mole, but it was too late. The cancer had spread from her skin and lodged inside her body. She lived 3 months. All her hair fell out, then she died. The teacher says, "Why are you sitting, Zazen?" "She died!" "Why are you sitting, Zazen?" "She was my sister." "Why?" "Because she died, and I should have died. I have a mole on my knee." I touched a knee that has supported my open palm for 61 days. "She died when I should have been the one. She followed all the rules. She lived her life exactly the way you were supposed to." My mind reels across the 3 months of tubes and shivering and throwing up in the wastebasket. It was so bad. Tears stain the flowers of my cotton pants, deepening the blue. "I don't know why I'm alive," I whisper, then raise my head and meet his gaze. "It's the good memories I can't stand." "What is good? What is bad?" he asks. I return to the early morning hours beside her hospital bed, where the rising sun cast her beautiful face into a place more beautiful than ever. The noontime reading of our favorite childhood books, funny voices and all. The 4 o'clock chemo when I combed my fingers through her thin strands of hair, and time flowed like a meandering river going nowhere, until the final evenings when she lay motionless, and I repeated every single story my mom and dad had ever told us about our family, and when those ran out, I recited all my memories from our childhood, good, bad, and different, because she was in them, I was in them, we had held them in our minds together. I stopped crying. It was our best time together, there in the hospital room where she died. I wipe my eyes. We sit in silence until the bell dings. "Each moment is a moment," the teacher says. "No past, no future, just now. Nothing is real. All is real. To grieve is to be ignorant. To love is to be supremely wise. Breathe in. All is breath. Breathe out. Breath is all. Good, bad, alive, dead. Sorrow, joy. Who is to judge life?" Once more around the archery range, once more inside the small room for Desson, once more with the questions, except now I have answers. What will you take away from Sechen? That I came to Sechen. Why did you come to Sesshin? There is no coming, no going. Who will judge you? No one will judge you. He nods. I sit. We are now. We pack up our cushions. We bow to each other. We silently exit the Zendo. When I retrieve my duffel bag from the female sleeping quarters, Jesus still waves, his upturned palm greeting anyone willing to pass. I step close to him. I lay my palm flat against his. We're all in this together, bro. I swear, he nods. Thanks for listening. Just Now first appeared in print in Memphis Magazine, the winner of its 2009 short fiction contest. To contribute to the American Cancer Society, please follow the link at can'tdonothingwithlove.wordpress.com or visit cancer.org. Message me on Facebook at Can't Do Nothing With Love. Our music, The Lights of Home, was written and sung by Mr. Rob Pate. Rock on, Rob.
Oh, he's the light of home. Thank you. Thank you very much.